Hello and welcome to the first ever United Stand podcast. I'm joined by Flex. How you doing, pal?
Yes, what's going on? First ever?
Yeah, first ever. Well, this show, realistically, we're going to do this weekly, probably going to go up on a Monday or Tuesday. A lot of people have been asking us to do this for a while. A lot of lesser channels, and I don't say that in an arrogant way, although we are, that have been doing it for quite a while. But this is going to be exclusive, so it's not going to go up on YouTube or Twitter or anywhere else. It will be up on here, and it's going to be sort of a mix between Manchester United, but also a little bit of a talk about the Premier League and the wider world of football. You know, some weird things happening over the weekend, and we're in the first international break. But we're going to start off with, I know you want to talk about Solskjaer out. So imagine if we'd called this video Solskjaer out, Flex.
Don't be doing that. They'll be thinking you're trying to push an agenda and blame the fan channels that the results ain't going the way that we want. Don't do that.
Well, you know what? I mean, I want to talk about VAR. I want to talk about August Player of the Month, Manager of the Month, Flop of the Month. I want to talk about the Champions League, the first sacking, who's going to get relegated, who's going to win the league. But we are a Manchester United fan channel, so we should touch on United. And I think the first thing I want to talk about, actually, Rashford or Greenwood, is a lot of people have sort of skirted around the issue here. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer saying that Greenwood is the best finisher in the club, but he's not getting many minutes. Is there a genuine conversation to be had? I know Rashford's playing bad at the moment. Is there a genuine conversation to be had that Greenwood is better than Rashford at this moment in time?
There isn't a genuine conversation to say he is better, but there's a genuine conversation to say he deserves a chance instead of or alongside. Because, look, at the end of the day, this whole 17-year-old thing, I keep saying it, I've said it in all our shows, the whole 17-year-old thing that Ollie's saying, or, you know, let's be patient and stuff like that. For me, Ollie's already put the pressure on the kid 3-4 times over. Yeah, he said that Lukaku out the door is a pathway for Mason Greenwood. That's the first thing. Then he was asked who's the most prolific goal scorer at the club. He said Mason Greenwood over seasoned pros who have been going 5 years in Martial and Rashford. Then he said... Then he said Mason's going to play a lot of games this year and he will score goals. Then he said he wins all the shooting competitions in training. So you have heaped pressure onto this kid. You've almost talked him into Manchester United fans' mouths, really. We all can see the highlights on online and on MUTV of him smashing up the under-23s. But realistically, it's actually coming from Ollie as well. We've actually got excited even more so over Mason Greenwood because of our manager. So if he's saying it and he's said all these things that have gassed us up and said, made us thought, actually, Greenwood, he should get a chance on top of the evidence that we are seeing from him in the under-23s and in little flashes on the preseason tour, then why are you not playing him? That's my thing. So I'm not in this camp of, and this is where you've got to be careful as football fans. You can't say that I sit next to a guy at Old Trafford and he's like, if Greenwood was on the pitch, this would not happen. He would score 100 more goals than Rashford. That we don't know. What I'm saying is, give the kid a chance and stop killing the kid in terms of bringing him on for 7 minutes here and there. Give the kid a start. Give the kid a start. And if you're not going to start, bring him on early in games. Southampton, come on, man. As soon as they go to 10 men, there was 20 minutes on the clock. If you're adding on injury time, best part of 24, 25 minutes left to play in the game. Well, that's a great confidence vote to say, I fancy you against a relegation struggle inside. Not that they're definitely going to go down, but do you know what I mean? Lower half of the table, at least, anyway. I fancy you against them with 10 men. I think you're going to get as the winner. Not 8 minutes. Come on.
I know, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, when a fan says Greenwood will do a better job, Gomez will do a better job than Lingard. I've literally just posted something on Twitter on the United Stand account that against Crystal Palace at home, Jesse Lingard made 20 passes, whereas Daniel James and Rashford in the same game made over 30 passes. Mata away from home against Southampton in 70 minutes made over 30 passes. So that shows me that Jesse Lingard as a number 10 doesn't get on the ball enough. And at the weekend against Southampton, you've got, look, I can see it. The reality is, Lukaku or a Martial probably scores 2 goals against Southampton because they make the front post run that any striker should. And what annoys me about Rashford the most is he's like a kid on a roller coaster ride who closes his eyes when they go around the loop. The cross comes in, the ball's on his head, and he's closing his eyes. And these are basic things. And I just think, you know, maybe Greenwood should, maybe there is a case that Greenwood is a better player. I think some people laugh at it and go, oh, you know, it's just sensationalist. But the reality is, I don't really think Rashford's improved much as a player since he was 19, because Mourinho didn't develop him in Martial. Maybe there isn't much of a difference there. I don't know, but we'll have to wait and see what happens with that.
Exactly. It's just easy as football fans, isn't it, to say, when something's not working, it's us as the fans. We can see what things are screaming out for, but it is still easy to say it will be fixed by doing this. Because I remember a time, and this is just being honest, when Mata was starting games and we all said Lingard should be playing because he's more mobile. At least he's quick. At least he's this. Now Lingard's playing every game. I've seen fans say, oh, but Mata's more creative. Do you know what I mean? We can't really win. So as football fans, when things are wrong, we look for a solution that we think is going to fix it. So there is a bit of that. And I even saw someone on Twitter saying that there's an agenda against Rashford because, you know, he's got 2 goals and 1 assist and so is Martial. You know, Martial's played 2 games, got injured in the third. Okay, he's played 3, got injured in the third game. And even when he hasn't been scoring, he's been contributing. Like, just on the ball, the way that he looks after the ball, the way that he creates space, the way that he links up with the others, with the other players. That's what I'm seeing from him. It's not an agenda. I don't think any Man United fan, well, clearly there are, because I've seen some have that opinion, to be fair, and they're entitled to that. But I don't know how they're looking at it, thinking that Rashford hasn't been playing poor. Because even in that Chelsea game where he scored two goals, one being a penalty, which was a fantastic penalty, he was poor throughout the whole game. It was only he took that chance really well. I'll give him that, where he was clean through and slotted it. And that's why we get frustrated with him, because he doesn't show that level of consistency and calmness in front of goal. For me, in them 3 games, I think Martial's been miles better.
I also think
agenda. That's just what we see.
There was something I was going to say positive about fan opinion, but also there was something there that you've just prompted in my head, and that's how we'll work on the podcast, because we have topics, but we'll delve into things if they come up. And I just think, you know, the world that we live in is very, you know, if you have a bad opinion about something, then you've got an agenda. And I think Marcus Rashford is probably the one player in the squad where there can't be an agenda. He's come from the youth setup. He's English, which obviously helps you with the British media. He clearly tries his best, and he doesn't really mess around like Lingard. I know he was on holiday with him in the summer, but there's no reason to have an agenda against
Marcus Rashford on the pitch.
Exactly. So yeah, I don't think there's an agenda with that. But going back to what you were saying there about fan opinion, and this is why I love fan opinion, is over this last 6 years, I've seen this countless times where, you know, Van Gaal was not picking Herrera, and everyone was like, you've got to pick Herrera. And the fans were right. And, you know, Mourinho was picking Fellaini, and everyone was saying, you've got to get rid of Fellaini. And the fans were right. And again, I think we're seeing it a little bit. I don't think football fans give themselves enough credit, because everyone gets lost in this coaching. Oh, they're a coach, they're an ex-player, this, that, and the other. But you count the amount of matches you watch as a fan.
Yeah.
And you analyse. You know, you're not sat there, you know, picking your nails or anything like that. You're watching a game of football. And I think fans, especially when you're a fan of a club, I always said this about Mourinho as well. Mourinho is a great manager, but he's not a Manchester United man. He doesn't know the history of the club. He doesn't know what we want as fans. The fans are the lifeblood of Manchester United. And I think that we know what we want probably more than some coaches. But that, I suppose that's the positive of Ollie. You think he knows as well, because he's part of that. Yeah. Exactly. I just think that we're close. And to sort of close that topic, I feel that we, the start to the season, which I want to get your sort of player of the month next. The start to the season for United is very bad. It's 5 points from 12. And we played crap. You know, we've played 2 relegation teams and taken 1 point from them. So, yeah, I can understand people saying, well, you know, wait for the Carabao Cup for the youth. But it's not like we can do
Already 7 points behind the top. Not that we was ever competing for first and second, but we're already 7 points behind Liverpool. There you go, after 4 games. That just shows how far away we are from them. But let's not talk about that. Yeah, in terms of our start, I mean, it hasn't been great, because, you know, you look at the Palace and the Southampton game. Essentially, really, they should be bankers, really, let's face it. Especially Palace at home. Haven't beat us at home in their history. And even at the fan camps, people were saying, you know, no matter what rebuild we're doing, Flex, no matter what progress we're making, you can't tell me that we're not supposed to beat Palace at home, no matter if we even put the youth team out. And to a certain extent, I understand, because it's still the Premier League, and, you know, look, Zaha's a good player, we get into our team, etc. I get that. But we should still have enough to beat Crystal Palace at home. We should. And we should have enough to beat Southampton away, especially with 10 men, you know? for a large chunk of the game. So it hasn't been the best start of the season. It's something that we all predicted, though. That's another thing where I'm kind of like, am I that mad? Am I that angry? Literally, me and you and Rance sat there with our early season prediction at the 500k party when we did that video. We was all in agreement, as was a lot of Man United fans that we speak to and seen on social media, etc. The general consensus is this team is the fifth, sixth best team even now on paper. So before it was like, on paper, yeah, you know, you could give Arsenal a run for their money. Maybe you'd put Martial over Lacazette, or you might do this, or you might have Son instead of this player. Now, team for team, man for man, you're looking at it and it's like, well, actually, yeah, sixth or fifth is our position. Rightly so. We might even finish seventh the way we're going now. We could finish seventh or eighth. So we're not, in that sense, I'm not actually that mad, because I expected this. I expected this. But at the end of the day, in terms of what you were saying about the player, like a consistent player, standout player for me, in what's been a poor start to the season, mine's Wan-Bissaka all day. I think he would be a lot of people's standout player. It could have been Martial. He hasn't played all the games, but for me, I like the way he's owned that nine position, linked up and showed us what he can really bring. Some people haven't seen that. I've spoke to some fans who are like, well, he's been all right. He hasn't looked any different. I've watched him closely. And I can tell you there's a difference in him. There is a difference in him. And he looks like he can really cement that place. But for me, the way Bissaka's come from Crystal Palace after his first breakthrough season, even on the tour, and I know it's pre-season, he played against some crap teams, but he was sensational on the tour, and he's carried that into the season. It was a little bit shaky in the latter stages against Palace, I'll admit that. Zaha gave him the run around, but when he was already on a yellow, so you couldn't really drag him down when he was running through that time. Looked a little bit leggy as it went on, but by and large, I mean, the guy, he's just unbelievable. It's, you know, going backwards, you can't get past him.
I'll give you a moment to think, and everybody who's listening to the podcast as well, because I'm going to develop this into player of the month, manager of the month, and young player of the month. Okay. And that's for the whole Premier League. So have a think on that. And I would say, for me, what young player of the month in the whole of the Premier League comes down to two players, and they're both at Manchester United. It's Daniel James and it's Wan-Bissaka. Because yeah. I think, yeah, United have had a bad start, but those two players, new signings as well, you've got to take that into account, new signings into new clubs. I can't think of anybody in the Premier League that has had such an impact. I mean, 3 goals from 4 games for Daniel James, and he didn't even start one of those games.
Yeah.
Wan-Bissaka's been great. My manager of the month will be Jurgen Klopp. I hate to say that. But, you know, we are going to sort of cover Premier League on here as well. So I'd go Jurgen Klopp, 4 wins from 4. Look, you know, we're not, this isn't a charity league. Just because Norwich have done well, we're not going to award it them. Liverpool have got 4 wins. And player of the month, I would go with, well, again, some people might say Norwich Pukki, but I'm looking across 4 games and I just think what a player he is. They won the title last year without him. He was basically missed most of it. I just think Kevin De Bruyne, for me, I think he's absolutely amazing. So I would go player of the month, De Bruyne, manager of the month, Klopp, young player of the month. I would go with Wan-Bissaka over Daniel James, and flop of the month, Lingard. So I don't know what
My player of the season so far after 4 games is actually Aguero. He's got 6 goals in 4 games. And he's a player who, there's still arguments out there, people saying, is he the best ever in the Premier League? Has he still got it? When Pep kind of came in, he was kind of looking at, you know, maybe not playing as much. You might get rid of him, given Jesus. And he's just answered every single one of them questions like he always does for me. So he's been brilliant. So that's the player. Manager, I agree, has to be Klopp. Out of 4 games, he's 1-4. So that, there's not really much you can say about that. And what was the other one? Young player.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Bissaka. It could really be James. It could be James, to be honest. But
I think with James, just to cut in, and we have to be careful on podcasts, because when we talk over each other, I know it messes up with people's ears. So apologize for that. It is our first one. But I think with James, he's brilliant. But actually, I'm going to be even handed and say I didn't think he played particularly well against Wolves. Palace, okay, but I think we saw the really best of James against Southampton. He went to the left-hand side, so it would be Wan-Bissaka for me, who I think has just been ridiculously titanium.
He's been so good, hasn't he? He's just, and you know, even in his interviews, I keep saying it. The kid, someone who just says, you never hear anyone say, "I love tackling." He just says, "I love to tackle people." Like, he just gets, it's like scoring a goal to him. And the way he just lets people think that they've got a yard on him, he kind of goes jogging over where you think, oh, flipping that one, you better get out there and close him down, sort of thing. But then you just got this air of comfortability about him that you just think, he's got it. This guy's not going to go past. And they never do. So, yeah, for me, I'm going to get a Wan-Bissaka shirt. I am. I haven't bought a player's name probably since I was a kid, since Cantona, to be honest. I don't really do that, but I don't know. There's something about Bissaka, man. I just love the guy. So, yeah, man, Bissaka's my guy.
The ridiculous thing is that I think it was against the Southampton game that I was looking at the tackle stats, and we put the tweet out, and Manchester Evening News even picked up the tweet, and it was like, tackles made in the game, he made about 20. The next best player wasn't even in double figures. I don't think he even had six. And Ashley Young made zero. So it just shows it's nothing to do. You know, like, if you're a midfielder, you're going to make more passes than anybody else because you're in midfield. But a right back, there's not really much logic that they should be making more tackles than anybody else. He just loves to tackle, like you say.
Yeah, he does love
tackles. What I should have said at the start in the podcast is we were talking about this before. We're going to try and chuck each other every week, like a really difficult question. And we can throw that in at any point. So I am going to, my question for the flex this week is going to be, and I'm trying to make it as difficult as possible. Why are you not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer out when, if he wasn't a club legend, we would be saying this is relegation form? And what would it take for you to be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer out? Because reality is, he's having a pretty bad ride at the moment. And I'm just curious as to why. And, you know, you could have been first with me, but, you know.
I knew that was going to come as well, because that probably was one of the questions I was going to ask you. But I've got another hard one for you. Right. For me, yeah. I've looked at this in many different ways. I absolutely take the point on board that his credentials are non-existent and any other guy doesn't get the job because they're, like I said, they're not affiliated with the club. But when you do have a rich history with the club and you do understand it, whether you like it or not, whether it's right or wrong, you do get leeway. You do get leeway because people associate you with understanding what the club's about. And when someone like Ollie comes in them press conferences like he did early on, I remember them first few press conferences he done. We were so happy. I was so happy. I feel stupid maybe now, but he just roped me in. Like, just the things he was saying, it sounded like a Man United fan had actually got the job. Do you know what I mean? And had been through the pain of the Jose era, the Moyes era, the Van Gaal era. And he was saying all the things that we want to hear. Even to this day, he's still kind of saying the things we want to hear, but we're just kind of not seeing it on the pitch. So that's the first reason. Secondly, which is what me and you kind of discussed the other day, actually, when you said it's more of a director of football, but what I'm seeing him do in terms of off the field, this is the first time I can see the club actually has a direction. Yes, we only bought three players in the transfer window, but those three players already have been fantastic in four games. We can see that they're going to grow, we can see they're going to improve, and we can see that there's longevity in them and impact straight away. They've made us better. So that, in terms of that recruitment, I'm not saying all the recruitment needs to be young, it needs to be British, but in terms of the way that they're trying to change things, I can see a clear direction. Yeah, that's the second thing. The third thing is the fact that, look at the players that he's moved on or frozen out of the team. Now, as United fans, we've been screaming for the likes of Jones, Smalling, Young, Damian, Rojo, Alexis, Lukaku, all these players. Herrera left, okay. Fellaini, we wanted out as well. We've wanted them moved on. For the first time since Sir Alex has left, really, in 6 years, this is the first time we're actually seeing somebody push these players out. Yes, we're thin. Yes, the transfer window wasn't great and we should have improved in midfield. And I don't completely blame Ollie for that because we don't really know the full conversations that were going on behind. I don't believe him when he says, I'm happy with the squad. I don't believe him when he says, you know, we just couldn't get the right ones in. Something's gone wrong there and it's the penny pinching that's coming into it. But that's a different topic altogether. So to answer your question, that those are the reasons why I'm not Ollie out when technically he hasn't got the credentials, etc. One, because he's a club legend, which automatically buys him a chance. Liverpool did it with Kenny Dalglish. Flipping Newcastle did it with Shearer. I know we got him relegated. But you automatically want to give them a chance and have more patience than you would with anyone else. That's just how sentiment and love goes, unless you are really cold, to be fair, which some United fans are, and said he should never have got a job. And the other points that I gave you, which is that I can actually see a direction. I can see him doing things. Where I do have concerns, like we've been saying in the Flexor Rancho, like we've been saying in fan cams, like you've been saying, it's the in-game management, and it isn't all done. And the fact that he's not bringing in a Gomez, he's taking too long to bring out Lingard at the starting 11. He's taking too long to play Greenwood, not giving him enough time. So it's kind of like, for all the good things he's done, there are still things where I'm like, he needs to improve on that. But I'm still willing to give him the time to put them things right. So for me, that is why I'm not Ollie out.
Good answer. I mean, just very quickly, what's your percentage on him being successful now? How sure are you that he's going to be successful?
Yeah. Do you know what? You see, it's successful, yeah. I don't think Ollie's going to win us a Premier League title. I'm almost certain of that. He won't, in my opinion. I just think he's going to leave us in a better shape for the next guy, personally. So in terms of what I think his mission is, obviously his mission will be to win the Premier League and get us back to the glory days, but I'm a bit more reserved than that. I would say I see his mission as stabilizing us and taking us in a better direction, then maybe in 2 or 3 years, be ready to pounce and start competing for the league again. So his percentage of doing that, what I see his mission is, I still think is 70%. Mm-hmm. In terms of being able to put us in the right direction, clear out the deadwood and start getting players that resemble Man United players. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just on that, though, he would have to be sacked because he ain't going to just go, is he? He's going to have to be sacked.
No. Do you know what? So just quickly, I do think Ollie has it in him because he loves Man United a lot. I could see him, say results were going really, really, really bad, like we were like 15th one time or one season and it was consistent. I could see him resigning, kind of going into Ed and say, listen, I love the club too much. It's not going well. I'll step aside. I could see him doing that. I don't think he'll let his ego, do that, because he does love the club. Don't get that twisted. It's not like the Jose thing. And Ollie loves Manchester United. People say he's a yes man and all that. And I know some of his decisions and stuff are very questionable. We're like, well, who's telling him to do that? Surely it must be because they're all pals. But one thing we all do know is that he does love Man United. And I think if it went really south, really bad, I could see him going into Ed. It might not come out in the press that he came and said that. It might just look like a sacking. But I would trust him to go in and say, Ed, yeah, this is not working. We've been 6 months and we've only got one win or some crap like that. And we're 17th.
I think the problem with Manchester United is there's two things that bother me at the moment. And I'm actually I will answer a little bit of that and say that I'm only 50-50 now. I'm only 50-50 whether he's going to be a success, which has changed a lot. But I still 100% back him and want him to be successful and hoping, but I'm only 50-50 now. And the reason I've changed is just two things, really. One is nothing to do with him. It's just the thing that a lot of people said when we got him, name me a caretaker manager that ever ends up being successful. They have a bounce, they get the full-time job, and then they fail. And that is consistently happened. And then the second thing is, I'm starting to open my eyes up to things that I was like, oh, it don't matter. Like, I'm starting to open up to my eyes to the fact that he failed miserably at Cardiff.
Yeah.
I'm starting to open my eyes up to the fact that McKenna and Carrick, as much as I like them, have no credentials. Mm. Mike Phelan is good, but hasn't really been in the game for a few years. Mm. I just have worries that if he hasn't got the network around him, is what I'm trying to say. So it's all about Ollie. And has Ollie got the credentials? I don't know. The jury's out. So I'd stay 50-50.
Well, he doesn't. The jury's not out on his credentials. He doesn't have the credentials.
Yeah, so we're living hope. That's what we're living.
Yeah, it's hope. Yeah, yeah.
The next thing I was going to ask, a bit more generic, is first sacking in the Premier League. I think, for me, will Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer be the first manager to be sacked? No, not in the Premier League. No, I know for a fact that the board would probably allow him to be in the bottom half of the table at Christmas and not sack him.
So they
love that security blanket of him being a fan favourite because it takes the pressure off them. So for me, Sheffield United, I can sort of, we'll answer the two questions in one here. Who's the first sacking? Who's going to get relegated? I predicted that Sheffield United Norwich and Brighton would be relegated. And they've all pretty much had a good start to the season. I'm not going to change my mind on that because it's a long season. I'm still going to stick with those three, although I think Newcastle maybe could slip in there. Mm. The first sacking, I think, will be the Watford manager.
I was just about to say him, yeah.
Yeah, they've had a bad start, and I think they've got Arsenal next. So I'd go Watford manager. If you know his name, Flex, that's a bonus point. I don't know what his bloody name
is. No, it's not Flores, is it?
I don't know. They change their manager more times than I change my pants.
I would have said him. I would have said him, to be fair. They have not got off to a good start, especially where Watford are kind of like that team that can give
good team.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean? They've got a good team. They can give you trouble. Javi Garcia, that's who it is. I just feel they are in a very bad position as it stands. Obviously, they're rock bottom. But not only that, is that they're known for doing well in the Premier League, you know? And yes, they've changed their manager quite a few times in the recent years, but this looks like a big slump. I know it's only four games, but it does not look good at all. So if not him, then I would say the Brighton manager, because he's new.
Well, no idea who that is either.
Yeah.
That's Chris Hughton.
Yeah, and I think it was the guy from... where was he? Was he at Swansea? Potter. No. Is that who he is?
I'm just joking. When you went, it's the guy from, I said Hollyoaks. I don't know. But that's the arrogance I have, to be honest with you. And I've got no reason to be arrogant. In fact, I would say Watford probably need a game against Man United, because then they could get some points. But these teams at the bottom, they change their managers so quickly. They change their playing staff so quickly. I just don't have any inclination to sort of keep an eye on them, really. Maybe I should. Maybe they will be our competitors. But moving to the league title, who's going to win the league? I said Liverpool at the start of the league, and I will say that I am a little bit bored of this Premier League season already. One, because United have basically screwed it up, and two, because I can, you know, Spurs have dropped silly points. Arsenal have already lost to Liverpool. Chelsea are not going to get anywhere near them. You know, we're literally into the first few days of September, and we already know that Liverpool and Man City are going to be going for the title. And as a United fan, that's really difficult, because Liverpool are our biggest rival, and City, obviously, our City rival, and I don't like them either. So Man City look brilliant. You know, he's got De Bruyne back, which is the old cliche of a new signing.
Yeah,
they've lost Leroy Sané, who I love, and it's not even caused them an issue. They've got Cancelo, who's not even playing at right back yet because Kyle Walker's playing well.
Yeah,
they're gonna get a lot of points. And
Rodri.
But having said that, I don't want Liverpool to win the league. I never want Liverpool to win the league, because and they should be respectful of that, because it's a rivalry that matters. That's what it's about. It's not about hate. But I do think Liverpool will win the league, because I've seen them a few times this season, and they've not been great, but they are in that habit, relentless habit of what they did last season, which was amazing, of winning games. And Arsenal are a good team, and they beat them in fourth gear. So I just think, well, yeah, it's going to come down to the games between Liverpool and Man City. And Man City have actually dropped 2 points to Spurs already.
Yeah, they have, albeit in the circumstances, which again was controversial for them. But
we'll talk about VAR in a minute.
I still feel that that City will win the league. I do. I feel that Liverpool's best chance of doing it was last year, especially because they only lost one game. And their chance to kind of kick on and catch Man City and bridge that them 2 points that they needed to win it, or a point if it was goal difference, I can't remember how many goals were scored, but was their best chance to do that was in the transfer window, and they didn't strengthen, did they? They've stayed the same. Now, I know they're amazing, so you could look at it like, yeah, but they're flipping, they're brilliant. But City actually did strengthen. I know they lost Kompany, and Silva's now in his last year. But City have strengthened. You know, they're going to start phasing out Fernandinho. Rodri looks a player. Like you said, they brought in a right back. It's only small tweaks, because that's all these teams need. But I feel like that's them saying we're not just sitting on what we can do. And for me, City have proved already with the two back-to-back Premier League titles that they've just got that they can sustain that high bar that they themselves have set. Liverpool will have to prove that they can get, what was it, 96 points last year? 98? What was it? whatever it was.
Not far off 100, was it?
Yeah, exactly. They need to prove that they can do that again. And look, there's not going to be a lot in it. I don't think that there's going to be, you know, 10 points, even probably not even five. But I feel like City's consistency will prevail. Like, I know a lot of Liverpool fans felt sorry for themselves last year because, you know, they've won, only lost one game. But, well, you drew too many, mate, because you didn't get more than the team that won. It's as simple as that. If it's 1 point, it doesn't matter. If it's goal difference, you should have scored more. When you're talking about titles, with the quality of Man City, you have to be that ruthless. You have to have those fine margins. And then, so I don't buy that whole we were just unlucky. No, you wasn't good enough, because you wouldn't have, that draw you had against Leicester when you were 1-0 up and Harry Maguire got an equaliser. That draw they had at West Ham, I think it was, in a period where they could have gone 7 points clear. I remember that, because I was thinking, right, City, Liverpool could do this, and they didn't do it. So whoever wins the league deserves to win the league. It's not luck. So I just feel that Man City have proven that they can repeat that.
It's difficult, because I don't think any Liverpool fan ever really wants to listen to a United fan when they're giving constructive feedback. But I went on Anfield Agenda in the summer and I said two things to them. And to be fair, it's a Liverpool channel and a lot of them did agree. And I said, look, I know you had this, you know, you can't dissect a season, because I remember watching the game against Everton before Christmas in the last minute where bloody Pickford drops it and they get 3 points instead of one. Yeah. But the two games, I mean, you just mentioned two really good games there, but the two games I watched, and I think that's where you blew the title and you should have won it, was Old Trafford, where
you lost all three
subs in the first half.
Forgot about that, yeah.
And they didn't go for us in the second half, and we got a point out of that. Then the following week, they go to Goodison Park, and again, don't really go for a point. And it was like Klopp settled, thinking a point at Old Trafford, a point at Goodison Park's a good point, and normally it is, but actually just two more from any of those games, and they would have won the title. Then the second thing is, what you're saying is right. I saw this. Well, I don't know whether you remember it, but I remember 99 winning the treble, and we didn't really buy anything in the summer. I can't remember what we did buy, but Roy Keane said it as well. We should have gone and bought a world class player, like a Batistuta or somebody, just to stop complacency, because we went and won the title for the next 3 years. And funnily enough, Man City, if they win it this year, they'll equal our record of three in a row. But we never got near the Champions League again. And I think Liverpool have, like you said, I think they have not invested enough this summer. They've got a great team.
Yeah, they do.
But, you know, if you just add a world-class player to that, just one, just to sort of make everyone get on their toes again, be interesting to see. But I'm going to stick with Liverpool. You're going to stick with Man City. What about the Champions League? Who's going to win that? Now we've seen the draws coming out.
Oh, mate.
I've gone for four. So you go for more than two.
Yeah, you've got to put Liverpool in there again. You have to. You have to, because they're a great cup side. They don't know when they're beaten. They've proven that in that Barcelona tie. Them. City's like a weird one, because you think they've got the quality, but they always bottle it in the Champions League. I know last year was very unlucky against Tottenham.
And very funny.
Very, very funny. Tottenham's name was just written on that Champions League final, because even what they've done against Ajax as well, they were just meant to be in that final. But I'm gonna put City in there. I'm gonna put City in there, because I think surely at some stage they've got to avenge this Champions League hoodoo that they've got, where they just can't get to the final or the semi or whatever. I think they did get to semi-finals. I don't think they lost against Barca. I can't remember. But also, they're gonna run the risk of Pep just getting bored, because if they don't win the Champions League this year and win the league again, which is quite probable, Pep's going to end up surely being like, well, Charmin, what more is there for me to do? Real Madrid, I don't think, are going to be strong enough. They're another work in progress. They're trying to rebuild. Bayern Munich, they're trying to rebuild, so I don't see them. PSG, they always flop as well. Even we can beat them in the Champions League. Then it leaves Juventus. I think Juventus will be in the mix as well. They got, like, I saw their bench the other day. I couldn't believe it. De Ligt was on the bench.
Yeah,
you know, De Ligt was on the bench. Dybala, obviously, he didn't end up going, did he? Anyway,
and obviously they've added in Aaron Ramsey and what's his face? I can think of his name. I can't think of his bloody name. I can picture him. Well, I'm saying, why do I want to say Capoue? It's not Capoue. It's the lad from PSG with the long hair.
Rabiot. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you're looking at them and they look very, very strong. And they themselves have, you know, been very unlucky in the Champions League, getting to finals, Pogba playing in one actually. And they just couldn't see it out. They get there or thereabouts. So maybe with Ronaldo, obviously we fought maybe last year, but it wasn't quite to be, but because Ajax dumped him out. But yeah, them. And then that's my three. And then there's always one that will kind of, you know, go the distance where no one fought, like how Ajax did. So I don't know who that will be this year. Maybe Napoli or something.
I presume Atletico Madrid are in it because they're not in
Atletico.
Yeah, they look good. They look good. They look like an outsider for the Liga, to be fair.
Yeah,
I don't think. I think Barcelona have bought well, but I just think that Barcelona's problem is the same problem the last 2 years, that they can bottle big leads. Mm. I like the look of Juventus, but I watch a lot of Italian football. I'm not convinced it's fast enough to deal with the Premier League clubs if they come up against them. I think Real Madrid will surprise a few people and do well, so I would keep them in it. But I actually think the favourites are Man City. I'm worried that Man City might win it this year. And
clean up, mate.
Well, they nearly did it last year, didn't they? And I do worry about Man City a lot. I think because as a Manchester United fan, I'm so frustrated and fed up with what's going on at the club that it makes you more amenable to what's going on elsewhere. And I'm not saying that the rivalry fire is disappearing, but I can't help but look at what Liverpool did 3 years ago in bringing Klopp in and how they've backed him and how they've built something. And I've got a lot more respect for that than I have Pep coming over with a bloody open checkbook. But having said that, he's still been backed. I think the Liverpool and Man City stories piss me off because I look at the Man City story and that's rich owners giving Pep what he needs. Well, we've got the money to do that and we haven't done it.
Exactly.
And I look at the Liverpool story, which is a slightly different way of doing it. Yeah, we're not going to chuck loads of money at the problem, but we are going to back it. We are going to build something. And I suppose I am jealous of that. So I think that those two are the favourites. And I think that Manchester City will probably do it this year. So I hope they don't win the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup. They just don't want the treble.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the only thing that we have over them, as sad as it is.
Yeah, well, history is all we've got.
That's it. We have turned into the new Liverpool. That is it, mate. And the only thing we have over the Liverpool fans is saying you've never won the Premier League, which they come agonisingly close for them. And then before you know it, there's not really much we can say to him, apart from we've won it way more times than you. But I'm not really interested in keep saying that, to be honest. I want to compete with these guys, man. I want to compete with these guys.
Yes, we definitely do. VAR, it would be wrong not to talk about VAR. Now, I'm just going to give everybody at home and Flex a little bit of a lesson here, as far as I understand it. The VAR situation, as we saw in the World Cup and the Champions League and the Women's World Cup, is that any contentious decision that fits into the criteria, they'll be told about it and they run over to the side of the screen and they have a good hard look at it and they make a decision on it. We haven't seen that once
in
the opening four games of the Premier League. The understanding is that whilst VAR has come into the Premier League doesn't want it to slow the game down. So effectively, they will look at things, but they will try where they can to back the referee's decision, which in my mind totally contradicts
what's the point of
VAR is meant to do.
What's
because, well, exactly. I thought that what we were going to have, and I don't like VAR. I'll ask you about that in a moment. I hate VAR anyway. I don't like it. I'd rather have the conversation on a Monday morning about what a disgrace that was or what a good decision that was. I'd rather have that because I think it's part of football.
Yeah.
But we're still getting those conversations, but in a more confused way, because we're now going, well, we've got this thing that's meant to stop this, but we're still getting it. And I go back to the weekend and there's a few incidents. There was a rather minor one on Mason Greenwood where he certainly was clipped in the box. Didn't get reviewed, which we'll talk about in a moment. There's the Jack Grealish one, which I think is criminal and, you know, absolutely criminal, because Crystal Palace will probably fight relegation. Aston Villa will probably fight relegation. And instead of them both taking 1 point, Crystal Palace have now got three and Villa have got none. That was ridiculous. And there's been quite a few decisions like it. The tackle that Tielemans did, which was reviewed, but decided it wasn't a red card. Well, you're at the games, you see. So this is why it's a good one to ask for you, because it's not easy to understand when you're watching TV, and it used to be, it was irritating, but it used to be, it must be doubly hard in the ground. So what's your initial thoughts on VAR and how they're running it? Because I personally think it's a disaster at the moment.
I don't mind it. I just think the application of it needs to be changed. And I think that the application of the law needs to be altered as well. Like how they've altered it to this handball thing where, like, just if it hits your arm, it's just the pen. Like,
yeah, but you know, on that, I was doing the watch along on Southampton on Saturday.
Yeah.
And McTominay, every time he was in the box, he had his hands like sellotaped behind his back. Like,
yeah.
Up. And no, I was going mad. I was saying, you don't need to do that. And everyone was going, yeah, he does, because if it's his hand. And I said, no. It's not that. If it's exactly. If your hand's in an unnatural position, exactly. It doesn't matter whether it's deliberate or not. But it can hit your arm if your arm's down by your side, and it won't be a penalty. It's not any handball. Your arm's got to be in an unnatural position, so players won't be putting their hands up anymore. But if somebody like runs into the box and tries to cross it, and McTominay's got his hand down by his side and it hits him from 2 yards away, that's not a penalty.
I just feel that they just need to change how they're applying the law. Like, obviously, it takes a while to get to these decisions in terms of it taking too long. I get that. And there isn't screens in all of the stadiums, so it is quite frustrating, and you're not really sure whether to celebrate a goal anymore. You know,
whether it's
an offside, someone scores it. Even like I tell you, when at the Wolves game, you know, it would have been fantastic for us as Manchester United fans. Of course it is, but I'm just putting myself, for the context of this argument, this debate, in the shoes of the Wolves fans. And Neves has just scored an absolute screamer, contender for goal of the season, yeah, and they're going crazy. It was deafening inside there. It's horrible. You just can see this, the worst. When you go to away days and the home team scores, anyone will tell you it's the worst. And then you get a VAR review. You know, we're all thinking, oh, please, PSG all over again. Work for us. This is great. But for those Wolves fans who have gone into pandemonium, if it goes for you, you get the chance to celebrate twice. If it goes against you, you feel like a right idiot.
You're never going to celebrate the same way again, though, are you?
No, you're definitely not.
That initial elite
release. I tell you what, though, it was awfully loud as soon as it says, you know, VAR decision, goal. It was a second roar, I'll tell you that. Because it won't be the same as the first, of course not. But because that anticipation of you think it might get taken away from you, and then you see it, that you still have it, it gives you a second wave. But look, at the end of the day, I don't like when things are decided off human error. When it's 2019 and there's technology, just how society's moved along. I think sports should, and I think other sports have shown ways to integrate technology into their game, and football should be no different. Football's the biggest sport in the world, in my opinion, or I don't know if that's a fact, but it certainly is one of the most watched in the world, if not the biggest, if not the most watched.
It is a fact.
Yeah, there you
just check that on the Goldbridge stats.
There you go. Football is the biggest sport in the world, so why should it not move with the times? Why should it not move with societies? You know, we've gone from, I know it's not the same thing, but in terms of the principle, football has moved on. We've gone from bloody crap pitches to flipping undersoil heating and sprinklers popping up, and because the game is evolving. People are evolving. Society's evolving. We've gone from to state-of-the-art flipping stadiums and stuff like that. So why should we not have state-of-the-art technology in the game? However, it just needs to be implemented in the right way. And there's a lot of teething problems. There's a lot of things wrong with it. The mere fact that there's a screen there for the referee to look at, but we don't want him to look at it, well, then take it away. What's the point?
They've all got them, haven't they?
Exactly. If you're not going to say to John Moss, actually, you are wrong, or go and look at this because you've made a decision and you need to relook at it, then take it away. What's the point? So for me, and I'm not sitting on the fence, I'm just saying it as I see. Like, I see a lot of good in it. I think there's some decisions that have happened that undeniably you can say, yeah, VAR's cleared that up really well. I don't think Alina would have seen that. You know, you look at stamps on players and things like that. And I know, again, that's why I'm talking about the application of it, because what's happening is we're going back and looking at incidences like the Bournemouth penalty or non-penalty against Man City at Bournemouth Stadium. He stepped on David Silva's foot. It's a penalty. That is a penalty. In the Tottenham game, when I think it was Rodri or was it Laporte, I think they were wrestled to the ground from a corner or an incoming ball. It's a penalty. I can see Pep's frustration. And if you're able to go back and look at that, why is a penalty not being given? That is ridiculous. So really.
Well, that, yeah, just to cut in there, that is exactly what I was going to say anyway. That's what frustrates me the most, is because I watched the London Derby at the weekend, the North London Derby, the NLD, and it was soft, but Dele Alli's on the edge of the box.
Yeah.
Sebias wrestles into the ground.
It's a foul.
And it's a foul. And it's contentious whether it's in the box or not, but it's definitely a foul, and it probably was a penalty.
Exactly.
The Mason Greenwood one, he knocks the ball. The Southampton player's a little bit late. He catches him. He kicks him. It's very soft, but it's a penalty. And like whoever is in these VAR rooms are looking at it and they're going, that's a bit soft. We don't.
So that's my question to you, Mark. That's
we don't want to underline the ref.
But that's my question to you then. Is the VAR the problem, or are the people using the VAR the problem? Are the people who are trained in working out? Because what for me, this is why I don't mind VAR. It's going to be down to someone's opinion anyway. So you may as well give someone the most amount of tools to make a correct decision. That's what I'm coming from. But what we're actually seeing is it's always going to be objective or subjective. What's the one where it's your opinion? Objective, isn't it?
Subjective.
Subjective. Yeah. There you go. I wasn't that good in grammar in school, even though I did get a B in English. But it's always going to be subjective. It's always going to be down to someone else's opinion or interpretation of what they're seeing. So I don't mind giving them more camera angles and replays and that, because then it should be easier to get to the decision. But what we're actually seeing now is incompetence of the application of the laws. So really, is the problem in the training of the perception of what is a foul, what is a penalty, what's a free kick, what's a sending off? Or is it in the actual, it's not in the actual VAR. The VAR is replaying what's going on from different angles, putting the lines on the pitch. It's giving them all the tools to make the right decision, but the right decision still ain't being made. So for me, the real question is, are these guys trained, or is the message being understood or received well enough from these VAR training that they've been doing? And that's where I think it will or should or has to improve over time, because that's the real question.
It's totally hypocritical. It's totally hypocritical, because if a goal is scored and the referee and the linesman say it's a goal, they're all reviewed anyway by VAR. So and then they say it's not a goal. So they're ready to make a decision against the officials anyway. Yeah. But then you get these decisions like the Dele Alli one, like the penalty on David Silva, like the you know, potential penalty on Mason Greenwood. And the best bit is, as a viewer on the TV, you watch that back and you go, well, he kicks him. And then you got people, I get it on the watch alongs, you've got people in the live comments saying it's soft. It ain't soft. Yeah, there's nothing in the rule book.
You kick him and it's a foul, or you don't kick him and it's not a foul.
So like people think
hard enough.
People think it's a dive if you've had contact. It's actually very clever. Like, you know, I've seen it before. A player runs into the box. I'm not talking about the one where you leave your foot purposely to connect to them. I'm talking about there is a contact, and maybe you go down when you know you could manage to stay on your feet. What's the point in that? I've never understood that. If the defender is stupid enough to leave a little bit of contact on you, I've got a right to go down. So I just think that, you know, United would have missed the penalty on Saturday anyway. But what I'm saying is, how is VAR working if they are watching offences and going, oh, it's a little bit soft, we don't want to undermine the referee?
And that is the one that was with the David Silva one. He stepped on his foot. In your opinion, was the Harry Kane one a penalty against Arsenal?
No.
Why not?
Because he the defender for Arsenal is never going to make an illegal foul, and Kane tries to create it.
And I agree with you. It was just interesting to see what you was going to say and why.
I would love it to have been a penalty. Yeah, I wanted the Spurs to win. But I thought the Dele Alli one was a foul.
Exactly. But the thing with the Harry Kane is, what doesn't go good for him is that, look, as a striker myself, you're taught to get your body across the player and shield it, obviously, especially if you're anticipating contact. But what he's done is in the same motion as trying to put his body there to protect it, he's already on his way. Do you know what I mean?
I think there was a penalty there to be had.
Yeah.
I just think he got his body movement totally wrong, like you say.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's interesting. I do think it will improve. I do think it'll improve. But I still stand by that. It's 2019, man, and I'm a big believer of technology in life and how we've moved on as a society. And I think that it should be in our game. There's enough other sports who have it. You look at tennis, you look at cricket, you look at rugby. They all do it. Why can't football, the biggest game on the planet, have it? That's my take.
We need to do it anyway. What's the point in getting rid of Chris Smalling if VAR is not going to work? That's the whole reason we got rid of Chris Smalling, is because of all the penalties he was going to give us.
Exactly. Right?
we're going to talk about racism, which is, you know, I think on the podcast we're going to try and get rants on every now and again, and we'll mix it up, but we're just starting out here. So Lukaku's obviously left Manchester United. I saw everything that was on, well, I've seen it all recently. We've seen the Pogba thing, we've seen the Rashford thing, and now we've seen the Lukaku thing, which it doesn't surprise me on the continent. No, it's still very, very bad. I don't want to get into the wrongs and right, because we all know it's wrong. I sort of wanted to get into the you know, what we do with it. And obviously, you know, as a white man and a black man, you're gonna have a very different opinion on me. That's the way it should be, because I can't relate to it. Mm-hmm. All I can do is, and I think I've told you this story before, is I was playing football in a very good side when I was about 14, and in the mid 90s, Spice World, and we were playing a team from an inner city team. Now, when I was growing up, I'm not gonna be apologetic about this, inner city schools were very you know, would be pretty much in Nottingham, the team we're playing would be predominantly black. And I think they were all black. And then my team, which was sort of a bit out of the sticks, was all white. Mm. You know, it's not like that now. It was that sort of a game. We played them after school. It was a court semi-final, and it was tasty. I think we had two players off. They had one sent off. I remember playing on the pitch. I think it was one of the best games I ever played, actually, because when you get determined, you just go into like sixth gear instead of fifth. And we won the game 2-1 in extra time. I remember stuff that was being said on the pitch was like, we got knives in the dressing room, we're going to stab you. And we were like, yeah, we've got a combine harvester, we're going to, you know, it's all like that. It all blew up on one of the sending offs in the second half. And our forward went past somebody and went, fuck off, you N. You know the word. Which was a racist comment, obviously. And the next day we got called into the office by the headmaster, and he said, we've had the complaints. And it wasn't actually from the team. So for anybody straight away thinking, oh, they've used the race card, it wasn't from them. It was from a parent on the side, and one of our parents who'd heard the comment and complained to the school, and the school withdrew us. That took me years to get over that, because the final was going to be played at the City Ground. And obviously we played together at Old Trafford this summer, and that's the first time I've ever played at a Premier League ground. So that opportunity to be taken away when you're 14 is hard. But I was actually speaking about this a couple of weeks ago with one of my kids, and I said, actually, the decision made by the school and everybody was right, and that was a teammate of ours who let us all down. Absolutely. And you play as a team, and you play as a team. And I don't think I'd ever really thought of it like that before, that when a teammate does that. So what I would say is that, look, Cagliari fans, more than one, are being racist to Lukaku. They should be banned. They should have to play the next two or three home games behind closed doors. Absolutely. Because it's the only way to do it. And I don't, look, the idiot on Twitter, who is probably a virgin and, you know, could be from anywhere in the world, and Twitter allows you to impact those accounts. You know, what you do about that, they're just an idiot. I think actually you're just fanning the flames by giving them publicity, because Twitter needs to sort that out. But that goes on in football grounds, when it's more than one person singing, then I think, you know, firmness is the way to go. And it could be a United game, and maybe we get banned from going, but I don't know what your thoughts are.
Absolutely. The problem is these so-called hardcore, I call them human, so-called human beings, because to me, they're not human beings. They're a disgrace to me. Look, I think that if they had those type of punishments, because these people do love their club, they don't particularly care who plays for it, because they might have black, I don't know if Calgary, I don't know how you say it, Calgary or whatever. I don't know if they have any black players, but I'm sure they must have at some stage. Maybe not now. But they love their football club. And the only thing that will hurt these people and show the club that it's not acceptable is to either kick them out of competitions, take 3 points off, take more than 3 points because they lost the game anyway. And like you said, more importantly, play behind closed doors. I know sometimes they shut sections of stands instead. Sometimes, you know, that could probably narrow it down to a little less, a little bit more appropriate, I suppose, because if it's come from one specific stand consistently behind that goal in that Calgary Stadium, that might be where all the hardcore racists sit. You know, you don't know. So I don't mind that, but the football club needs to feel it, and the fans around them need to feel it, because then they're going to stop doing it. I don't think there's enough sanction. You're right about the stuff on Twitter. I had it some racial abuse a couple of weeks ago. Some idiot said, you know, flex your N-word. You're an N-word or something like that. I can't even remember. And I looked, I thought, let me just check out of curiosity. So I reported it, not thinking anything too much of it would come through. I thought, let me report it to Twitter. This is the first time I've personally had to do this where it's happened to me. So let me see what the steps actually are. And then you report it and it says, please attach the tweets of what they've said. And I was looking for what he had said to me and it wasn't even there. So I couldn't even attach it. Then it says at the end of it, just to let you know, you can mute this person and you can block them. So I went back on this thing a couple of weeks later, which was a couple of days ago, just to see that account. It's still there. It's still there. Just chilling. It's a fake. Don't get me wrong. It's a DP pick of not the person. And it's a fake. But this is the problem. It's way too easy on social media to just make up a name, an alias, and just abuse someone. And you're right. We're almost, it's difficult because when it comes up, you need to address it. It incenses you. It makes you angry. And you think, who are these non-humans? But really, by doing that, especially on the social media world where it's so unfiltered and so easy to have many different aliases, you're actually putting petrol on the fire and just giving these idiots a bit of exposure. Even though they're not getting exposed as the real them, they're saddos who, oh, look at my tweet, it's gone viral because I racially abused Tammy Abraham, because I racially abused Marcus Rashford or whoever it is. Do you know what I mean? So it is that. But in the world of football, I think... You know, I saw one, I can't remember, I was talking on BBC Five Live when it happened last year when they called me up, and there was like a small fine for the club. What's that? What? What's 250 grand to a top tier football team? You know? What is that? What, we're going to fine you 250 grand because some of you, no, that's not going to hurt the team. Saying that you're going to get no gate receipts from people coming in to watch your game because of racist abuse will hurt that team. Do you know? So the authorities need to do more about it as well. And even at grassroots, Mark, man, like that's another thing I was going to say. Like, this ain't just Premier League football, you know. This is going on up and down countries, especially in England, down to like youth football, down to youth football. And there was a parent who rang in and she said that she took her son to, you know, they play at a decent level, but it's, you know, like under 13s or under 12s or something like that. And there was racist abuse. And she said that what she had to do just to even report it was long. It was strenuous. It was difficult. She had to chase people. Then there was a generic email of, oh, we will look into this. There wasn't anything done about it. And that is the problem. The perception that, well, yeah, it might be bad that I think black people are this, or I want to say this, but what's the worst that can happen? They give me a little ticking off, or, you know, they won't really know, even though it's me, you know? So that needs to change, that perception of nothing bad will happen. You know, if you commit murder, you know you're doing life if you get, you know, convicted. There's a clear consequence that you know you're going to receive if you do something. And I don't think that's there with the racism. I mean, the guy who was at Chelsea, did it at the Chelsea game, obviously got his season ticket revoked forever. You know, okay, that will hurt him, but I dare say that he'll still go home and hold racist views in his house, within his household. And that's where it also comes from, because it's a societal problem. The problem is in people's homes. It's away from football pitches. It's in people's houses. It's in people's cars with their family if they hold these views. It's what they pass on to their kids. It's what's in the workplace, in covertly or uncovertly. It's in all of these places, man. And until that changes and the education changes and of perception changes, then we're not going to see any difference, man. I expect to see a lot more of it, to be honest with you. It's never really gone away. There's talks that, you know, we always say like, oh, in the John Barnes days and that, and you know, Sir Regis and all these players back in the day, Fashanu and stuff like that, they got bananas thrown at them. So don't get me wrong. They had to go through a lot in physical terms. It was there, they're throwing it, they're saying it week in, week out. Now I just think it's a bit more covert and it pops out every so and then. That's what I think.
Good Pavel stuff. We're not afraid to do that on the podcast. Yeah. We've got 70 seconds to wrap this up so we can keep it under an hour. I would say is that, look, I grew up in the late 80s and 90s, and I've said to you before, like, you know, it was almost a joke at school, some of the stuff that used to get said. And it was said as a joke because it was acceptable to be a joke. Mm-hmm. And I know what it's like now with my kids at school. And I know it's brilliant how it's just totally and utterly unacceptable. So I definitely know that it's improved. But having said that, I'm not a victim of it. And, you know, it's still there, and it's still, you know, it's still being there is is still racism. So, you know, has it improved? Probably not, because it's still there, isn't it? So.
Exactly, and it's not, and I don't see it envisaging changing. It is very much still there, and you're right. Just quickly, just finish off. You look at what was acceptable in then, and there was those times, the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, to what's acceptable now. I love Only Fools and Horses as a program. Love it. It's my favorite ever program ever. I've got the box set, I've got the mug, I've got the dressing gown, the slippers, everything. I'm a big geek like that. But even some of that, you know, you look at some of the things they say in it.
Yeah, yeah.
They might say, oh, yeah, the darkies down the road, or the colored lot down at, you know, you can't, it's bad. It's bad. And that's what I mean. Society changes. But these things are held within society because they used to be okay. They used to be okay. And that is one of the biggest problems, the fact that this was ever even okay. Do you know what I mean?
We're back next week. I hope everybody's enjoyed it. It's flown by for us. And it's here. It's only going to be here. So make sure you, I don't know what you do on here, Flex. I don't know what they do. Do they get notifications, or do
you're
they
such
just
a
follow
YouTube
us?
Guy. Look at you. You have no understanding of anything.
I have no Twitter.
And Twitter. They go on there, they can put comments on it, just listen, man, just listen. They can leave feedback and let us know what they're thinking. So yeah, it'll be on as many platforms as we can. We're working on getting this on out on iTunes as well, so that will be on there very shortly. We've already got it up on Spotify. We can get it on TuneIn. It's going to be on Deezer as well, so all your big podcast platforms. And if it isn't on there, we will just have a link that we're going to put out where you can just click the link and it'll just play on your phone anyway from Audio Boom. So don't worry about being able to listen to it. There'll be plenty of places to listen to it.
Thanks everyone for watching, and we'll
stop watching, it's listening.
See, I said that on purpose. See you all soon.